Welcome to the CEO Playground, the podcast where business education meets comedy and curiosity. Join our hosts, Chris and Aaron, as we share our hilarious experiences building businesses from scratch. We're here to entertain and educate, bringing you valuable insights and practical tips in a lighthearted and funny manner. Get ready to laugh, learn, and embark on a wild journey through the world of business. Welcome to the CEO Playground. How you doing, Chris?
I'm doing well, Mr. Valentine. How are you doing?
You know, it's a fabulous weekend here in cloudy Southern California.
I know.
Slightly bipolar.
I apologize for the amount of rain in Southern California. In all the years, I've lived here since 2007. This is the most rain we've ever received. But don't worry, everybody in California, because in 2 weeks when it stops raining, the state of California will start telling us we're in a drought and start taxing us more on our water. So rest assured, California will come after your money, regardless of the amount of superfluous rain we've received.
Wonderful. Today we're going to be going through the first episode of the show that came out. We're at the Beach Shack, and we're trying to raise money and sell food to see who can run the best Beach Shack. So today we're going to give you our insight to that and how we feel coming out of week one, knowing that Chris and I both survived challenge number one.
It's a weird feeling. I feel good because I survived, but feel terrible because my team lost. And everybody who's watching the show now is just busting my balls. A lot of ball busting.
That's all that's come out of this, really. I've had, over the last week, been getting milked by everybody who's watched the show. They're like, Aaron, you did this, or Aaron, you did that. This drama's insane. I'm just glad that I didn't look too negative in the first episode.
No, you were great.
That was a highlight.
You were great. I mean, I'm some key points for me. Out of all the one-liners that I had in the 4 days of shooting that challenge?
Yeah.
My one-liners are, everything I cook is well done. And cheddar cheese, even though it has better flavor, it's cheaper and it's still yellow.
It's a very good point. I can tell that you don't cook and food's food to you. Considering you live on gummy bears and snacks, I doubt the type of cheese is ever going to bother you.
No.
You're adaptable.
No, I am adaptable. And what I said, my son was busting my balls and I was like, you know, you eat gorgonzola and smoked gouda and provolone that's been aged by like an old Italian woman in her armpits and is now like overpriced, right? I grew up on American yellow cheese that was dirt cheap, and you put it on everything. And I told my son, if you don't like my choice of cheese based on color, you're not gonna like knowing how pest control was handled, how I grew up. That's a crazy story.
I saw your Instagram story. Share that briefly with us.
Yeah, no, it's crazy. If you grew up poor, government cheese is the term for American cheese. And that's because that's what the government handed out to poor people. And that's what I ate growing up. Pest control, where I grew up, Union City, New Jersey, on 39th and Burgerline, there was a guy, overweight guy, in a wheelchair. He had no legs. And he was selling you Tempo. And he would yell out, Tempo, 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 mata las cucarachas y la suegra también, which means kill the cockroaches and your mother-in-law too. And this guy, you would go to him to buy rat poison that would kill anything that you had, cockroaches, rats, whatever you had in your apartment. And he was also slinging contact lenses. I'm fucking serious. Outside of a Burger King on the corner of 39th and Burgerline. That's what he was doing. Now, I know a guy who bought contact lenses from him and went temporarily blind, had to get taken to the hospital, and they had to fix him up. But this guy was such a great fucking sales guy. He sold so much Tempo. Tempo was like the poison in town. If you wanted to fuck with someone, you put a little Tempo in their drink. And then they'd have like the shits, and they'd fucking puke, and that was it. He was so good at selling that the Metro PCS store across the street gave him a job. So given a whatever time of day it was. He was either across the street selling you a cell phone plan, or he was outside the Burger King trying to sell you contact lenses and rat poison. It was fucking hilarious. So government cheese is the least of my fucking problems in life.
No, you'll survive after eating it. I'd argue that the government cheese that I grew up on made the best grilled cheeses no matter what. Melts beautifully.
Melts fantastically.
And the people that think that you need some fancy cheese, it never melts on time. You end up with burnt bread. And that was my life. So I always went for the Kraft singles.
Yeah, and cheddar, in that challenge, cheddar cheese was priced significantly higher. I think it was almost double the price of American cheese. And at the end of the day, it was a profit challenge, not a challenge on who was serving the tastiest food.
No.
I think Luther was all up in arms about his fucking meatballs. I'm just trying to make fucking money here. And, you know, so I'm like, hey, American cheese. It's cheaper. It's still yellow. Fucking sell it. Let's sling American cheese on the fucking beach.
And in reality, I think most of the restaurants that I've worked in, they use American cheese anyway. The good old singles, it's the cheapest to come by. And you're not going to notice a difference unless you're trying to go to some fancy cuisine restaurant. And that's not what we were doing.
No, that's not what we're doing.
Not at all.
It was a profit challenge. We're on the beach. So everybody out there who's giving me shit on American cheese and it being yellow, it is in fact fucking yellow. It's delicious. It melts great. Fucking eat it. Get over it.
I like that. So throughout the challenge, we had lots of... I mean, it was our first one. I think for us going into that, I was a little starstruck. It was the first time we meet Gordon. He jumps out of a helicopter, and I was literally in awe on the beach because he walks up to you, and you're like, oh, my God, you are way bigger, and you're like a real-life person.
Were you really starstruck?
I don't know that starstruck is the right word. We're giving a little too much credit. But at the same time, yeah, because you've never – that was probably the most influential person I've interacted with.
At that point in your life, is that the biggest celebrity that you had ever been that close to?
Hands down.
Yeah?
Hands down. I mean, they don't make celebrities like that in the boonies of Missouri, in the small town. I think my local celebrity was probably my high school principal, and he's the most recognizable guy. And if you saw him in the store, you didn't want to say hi to him. So
who was also the town meth dealer. So, you got multiple streams of income right there in the rural Missouri area.
Yeah, no, it was a cool experience. So when he tells us it's a profit challenge, we have to make our food and create these beach shacks. Right away, I'm thinking, let's work as a team and put together a cool concept. And we had people that started fighting over the name of the restaurant, and it baffled me.
Talk about that a little bit. You got Lan and Caroline there yelling at each other, creating tension on day one. You barely know anybody, and you're in this challenge. What's going through your mind?
I think I thought going into it, okay, we have all these business leaders. Yeah, we're reality TV. But I was like, this is going to be a very cohesive 10 weeks in these challenges. We're all very smart people. And then to hear the two girls go up in arms over our restaurant name, I was shocked to hear them throw out one idea and then the other person get almost offended by this idea. I thought, well, we're sophisticated business leaders here. I don't think the name is something we should be fighting about because it has nothing to do with how much fucking money we can make.
No, it doesn't. Like, no one's going to be drawn in by the name of your beach shack.
No.
Yeah, I mean, at one point in my shack, you know, I'm like a fish out of water. I'm just taking orders from Chanel, taking orders from everybody. Tell me where I plug in, how I can be of value and help you guys. Other than that, I have no input. I turn around and I see you guys fucking arguing with each other. I see Lan and Caroline and I'm like, yes.
Dude, my eyes were as big as dinner plates as they start going. I was like, I can't believe that this is happening. It felt, you know, like I was in some Beverly Hills reality TV show where the people just argue about nothing. And it's entertaining to everybody that watches it. And that's kind of the feedback I've gotten over the last week.
But it's not entertaining to the people that are there in the moment.
Yeah, they're like, this drama is entertaining. Yeah. And I was like, I wish I could say the same as I'm trying to cook food because all it's doing is causing a clusterfuck in our kitchen.
Yeah.
And I'm not trying to go home on the first week. Simple as that. That's embarrassing.
Yeah, I don't think
I would have.
I mean, that's a... Sorry, Kagan.
I would have been embarrassed if I, you know, because for me, this is the biggest thing that I've ever got to do. And everybody back home that I'm close with, you know, you're leaving. And I'm like, yeah, I'm going to LA for a couple months. If I were to come back after a week, they'd been like, Aaron, what the fuck did you do? Like, I bombed it.
Well, if you watch the show, and if anybody watched the show, the first thing I say to Gordon when I walk in there is, I'm embarrassed to be here on week one.
Mm-hmm.
That's how I felt.
Yeah.
That was the first thing, even before I sat in my chair and positioned myself, I'm like, I'm embarrassed to even fucking be in here. So I could only imagine how Kagan, Kagan's a great guy. I just want to do a shout out to Kagan. Kagan, I got to know Kagan in that short period of time. He seems like a great guy, great family guy, business minded. It's just unfortunate he undercooked the burgers and he was sent home. But at the end of the day, it's a competition.
I think going into it, especially in the first week, my philosophy was just kind of to hang back. I don't have the culinary experience that some of the other people did in that shack. And so I was like, I'll help where I can when it comes to maybe the branding and marketing where I'm a little bit stronger. But at the end of the day, it comes down to the dish that we're preparing and the execution that we have in a high volume situation like that. And so I was like, I'll just let everybody else be the star here. And I'm not trying to take anyone's thunder away from them because I know going into the second challenge, I'll be able to have a much better idea of who's going to try and steal all the thunder right away. And it was cool too. I mean, we start cooking, we come up with our ideas and we're mid essential challenge. We got people showing up to the beach, and at this point it's game on. Everybody starts executing their dishes, and to start, I didn't really have any issues. I felt like things were going fine. I mean, how was it to start in your shack? Did you feel good about it?
Within the first 5 minutes of us working, everything fell to shit.
Really?
Like every piece of planning that we put in place prior to the shack opening fell apart. We might as well have just been sitting on the beach putting sand up our assholes the whole preparation time. It was like everyone forgot what their roles and responsibilities were. I sat back and I was like, is this supposed to work like this? I don't think so.
Yeah.
But you have dominating personalities there that's what they do. And, you know, somebody texted me last night and said, hey, Chanel, Everybody gives her credit for opening up a food truck and running a food truck. But did anybody stop for a moment and think maybe she runs a food truck because she can't get another job? And I was like, that's Big Dick Bobby. Big Dick Bobby texted me that, Owen, late last night. He's like, finally watched episode one. And that was his commentary on it. And I was like, you know, now you have all these people who are outside coming in, making commentary on things that we experience and really don't know what it's like to be in that situation, that pressure cooker situation. So not taking a dig at Kagan for getting kicked off, not taking a dig at Chanel for being team leader, but at the end of the day, you open yourself up to a lot of criticism.
I think that it's evident no matter what you do, something as simple as that, with Big Dick Bobby, I think if he were to stand in Chanel's shoes for a day in her food truck, he would look like a Little Dick Pee-wee. Like he would,
Little Dick Pee-wee.
He would get so ran over by the amount of volume that comes into a food truck. I have no clue who this guy is or what he does, but I would love for him to stand a day in Chanel's shoes and watch him get bitch slapped by the vegan crowd at their next event, because I know it would happen.
I'll tell you something, and that first challenge, I was not afraid of Gordon. At no point was I nervous about meeting Gordon, getting lashed out by Gordon potentially. I was fucking petrified of Chanel.
Chanel's intimidating, dude.
Chanel, for those of you that are listening, for those of you that are watching, Chanel was the most intimidating contestant on Food Stars. She made me nervous. She made me very, very nervous because I did not want to piss her off.
Well, I think a lot of with like Chanel's personality is she does not take shit, and she will let you know when she's not digging you at all.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of respect there for someone like that, because I'm quite the opposite. And I think that was one of the biggest things Gordon told me was, you're a lamb. You need to speak up. People like Chanel had no problem of speaking up.
No, Chanel.
And I admire her tenacity in that. That's probably why she has such a successful food truck. You got a small team. Ain't nobody fucking up on Chanel's watch. Otherwise, they're getting the back of the hand.
I have. Exactly. I got a shit ton of respect for Chanel because she don't take shit from nobody. And, you know, when we were done with the challenge, they were like, so how do you think you did? I was like, I just hope I didn't piss off Chanel. Chanel, there are things called alpha males. Chanel's a fucking alpha human being, regardless of gender. I could picture Chanel beating the shit out of a fucking room full of like biker guys, just like and stuffing vegan food in their fucking mouths and suffocating them with like fucking asparagus burgers.
You know, I realized that this competition was real when we were at the beach shack and we had about more than 10 orders in. And at that point, I quickly realized Lynn had never expoed before. and it was then that I realized, okay, this is for real. We got to get our shit together and figure out how to make money.
Yeah, that's a wrong time to figure out that one of your teammates is not good at the job that they're doing. Yeah. When you're in the thick of it and you're in the weeds of it. It's funny because I thought we had a plan going into it. I felt good about it. I felt my team knew what their roles were going to be. It all fell apart. Almost instantaneously, it fell apart. And I was like, what the fuck is going on here? But I don't have enough experience, nor was I, did I feel like, rather, that I was in a position to tell anybody, hey, get your shit together. Although, I will say in that first episode, I did take a step back and I realized I avoid confrontation in the moment because I like to absorb information and I like to come back with a solid plan as opposed to reacting in that moment and telling people, hey, get your shit together, right? But that came back to bite me in the ass because had I said in the moment, guys, get your shit together, yeah, I may not have been the most popular person in that moment, but we would have performed better. And I think we would have avoided the loss. And so I took a step back and I actually had a conversation with Owen afterwards. I go, how many times do people tell me bullshit in business? Like I sit in a fucking bullshit meeting and people just spew shit at me and I smile there and I nod. I take in. Doesn't mean I don't know you're full of shit. Doesn't mean I don't know that you're trying to pull a fast one on me. I'm just looking at you and I'm smiling and I deflect with my humor. And then I take a step back and I go, motherfucker, I'm going to plan, I'm going to strategize and I'm going to fucking cut your throat. That's how I operate. Although a lot of time I'm finding out in my life could be saved because time is the most valuable thing we have because it's finite. If in the moment I just told people, you're a piece of shit, you're wasting my time, get the fuck out of my office. This conference call is over. You could give me back my next 35 minutes.
You would save a lot of time in your life and it would make you a lot more efficient. I think looking at how the your shack went and my shack went, would you going into it change your strategy? Would you pick a different food item? I mean, you obviously seem like you'd step up and say some shit when you realized things were going south, but would you have a different strategy going into week one knowing what you know now?
Yeah, 100%. If you put me in any new situation, I'm going to try to figure it out. This is what I've done my whole life in business. And my business acumen is a result of survivor mentality. You know, the strategies and the techniques that I've used, they were created out of the necessity to survive. You know, not having money and trying to figure out how you're going to eat, trying to stay safe on the streets. That's all a survivor mentality, right? So you put me in a first situation, I'm going to survive. Once I learn and I adapt, the next time you put me in the same situation, I'm going to thrive. And that is how I operate. So the first time, I'm just absorbing information. I'm just trying to fucking keep my head over water so I can live. And the next time, I'm going to fucking own that motherfucker. That's how I operate.
So what you're saying is going into next week's episode at the gala, we should expect you to thrive.
That's it. But I'm telling you, in week two, I went in with a massive chip on my shoulder and I was ready to fucking just not necessarily kill anybody or cut anybody's throat, but just prove myself and set myself apart from everybody else. That's how I felt about it.
So I think we got a lot to expect going into the second week of Gordon Ramsay's Food Stars.
And you're just going to have to tune in to see if I actually fulfilled that fucking promise or if I fucking fall flat on my face like a loser.
which would be nothing new for you, you fucking loser.
Yeah. You've been talking to my brother too much.
So, I mean, we know you would do things a little bit differently. Now, we're going and realizing, you know, all these different characters, you're keeping an eye out on everybody. Did you have someone in particular after the first week where you're like, oh man, so-and-so knows their shit. I need to watch out for them going forward because they could be somebody who's really coming at my throat for the following challenges.
No, you can't ever underestimate people. And I think that's the mistake. And yeah, I have a level of confidence, but I'm also self-aware enough to know that anybody can pull out. I mean, I grew up at the track. My dad made a shit ton of money betting on long shots, right? So I know the shit can come from any angle. And so there were some contestants that I was legitimately afraid of. Chanel, I knew if I pissed Chanel off, she would come back and she would make my life a living hell. Caroline, she's very vocal and opinionated. So you can't piss her off. Right. So even though they may not have my same business acumen, that, you know, they can cause problems and drama that's unnecessary, that could be a distraction from what the ultimate goal is.
I feel like I quickly picked up on that. And I think it is something that I realized right off the bat at week one was like, okay, there's going to be conflict of some sort, no matter how big or small that I think it is. It's a matter of how do you work around it and let that conflict stay between the two and still tackle the mission and the objective as a team.
That's it. I mean, like, Lan's extremely opinionated. Jordan, I always felt, would, if you pissed him off, he would just bitch slap you, right? Megan was extremely well-spoken and extremely polished. And so, you know, from that standpoint, I looked at Megan as the biggest threat. Jake is young, energetic, lacks inflection in his voice. Jake, I love you, but I told you that to your face. But, you know, very polished. I'm not the most polished person. I speak my mind, and it just is what it is. So, like, what it takes somebody like Megan fucking 20 sentences to get across, I could say in one sentence and three fucks. So, you know, so it all depends. Like, what's Gordon looking for? Is he looking for an extremely polished person, or is he looking for a gritty hustler who's smart? And that's what I was trying to figure out. And the only person I know how to be is myself. At the end of the day. But let me ask you a question. Who did you think, like, out the gate, who were you worried about in that beat shack? How did you process what you were seeing?
I think off the jump, looking around, I mean, in my mind, I'm quickly ruling out the people who caused unnecessary confrontation because I didn't think that that would come to any benefit throughout the series. And so I immediately was like, Caroline and Lan are going to get themselves knocked out. I don't have to worry about them. And then, you know, I didn't pay attention to everybody else's shack as much as I paid attention to my own. But Tony's, you know, from seeing his experience and what he was able to do, the dude knows how to hustle. He knows what he's doing when it comes to a food business. So immediately I'm like, okay, this guy knows this stuff. I'm curious to see. He's not as well put together as someone like Megan is on a professional standpoint. And so you see something like that, that could be somewhere where they lack, especially going later into the challenge. You think Gordon's looking for someone who has the expertise that he has at the end of the day to be able to keep up with Gordon's business lines. And I was like, well, Tony's new to this. Jordan's new to this. He's doing taxes, eating breakfast, asking me, like, bro, how do I do taxes? This is my first time ever. So you look at people like that, and I'm like, well, they're probably in the same boat as I am. Like, my experience isn't cutting me as short as I thought it would. Look at someone like you, though, and even looking at Caroline, you know, these two people, you guys, you seem more established, like you had more under your belt. And so for me, with no experience, that is ultimately where I felt I lacked the most, is I didn't have the experience. And so someone with more experience inevitably should be able to one-up me any single day of the year. And if they can't, they don't actually have the knowledge or the know-how with the experience that they have.
Yeah, and that first week, you know, you hear everybody's story. And you just have to think, like, who's full of shit and who's the real deal?
Yeah, and you find out quickly who's full of shit. Because once you know who the person is, you can do your own investigating on your own time.
Yeah.
And you quickly, you know, you go back after that challenge and I was like, okay, I know who everybody is. Let's see what I can find out about them.
Yeah. And it's one of those, when you're in the weeds, in the trenches with someone, that's why the brotherhood between soldiers and military people is so deep. because when you're in the weeds, you know what someone's capable of. You know how well they got your back. You know how they're going to operate under pressure. That's why I fucking love Owen, because I know how he's going to operate under pressure. I know, you know, his capacity, and I trust him. I can't say that I fully trusted everybody on my team in that first episode.
No, you can't. There's no previous relationship, especially if you have someone as well-spoken as like Megan on your team. From the get-go, I didn't know whether I could trust her or not because she puts off this beautiful front. She's a gorgeous woman, speaks really well, but you quickly come to find out after the first challenge, she's in it all for herself. And it's hard to know how to go about that person because it's like she can get lots of shit done. She has a really good advertising background. She's a marketer. And I know from my experience with marketing and salespeople, they'll spit shit and they don't give a shit what's happening as long as they get their cut and their commission.
Salespeople.
Yeah, they're in with their own objective and that's all they care about at the end of the day.
She's polished. I'll get out of everybody, all the contestants, she, I wouldn't say threatens me, but she was the one I was most worried about.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because she's been in the game long enough to know what it is that people are looking for, what people want to hear, how people are going to react to certain things. And that comes to your benefit. I think if I've learned anything the last few years is that knowing how to communicate and having strong communication skills will be the number one thing that makes you win in any scenario.
Absolutely.
You can talk a big game and get the job that you want, and at the end of the day, you don't know shit. Like,
absolutely. Yeah, how many dumb fuckers that speak really well and present really well?
Yeah, so, I mean, over the course of this first challenge, the first week, we have noticed lots of different points. I think for you and I, we pretty much sat in the back seat and examined everybody being in the first week, and it became more of a strategizing challenge than anything else. It was like, let's get through this and let's move on. We learned a lot about the people there. We quickly picked up on people's dynamics and what it was that they're about, their story, and I think it gave both of us a more level head going into next week's challenge at the gala, knowing what everybody else was up to and what they were going to go for. And so overall, it was a really cool experience and a huge learning experience for both of us going into the following weeks, would you say?
Absolutely. It sets the tone for everything else. And so, you know, Megan, Chanel, we know Kagan's out, right? Mm-hmm. But now you see who the players are. You've heard them speak. You've heard them operate. You just got to tune in to see. Is it our dumbasses that go home next week? Is it Megan that ultimately wins? You know, it's going to be very interesting how this all plays out.
Yeah, you know? Absolutely. So make sure you check out week two or episode two of Gordon Ramsay's Food Stars on Fox. If you miss it there, it'll be on Hulu. And as always, don't forget to check us out on socials at theceoplayground.com. Thanks for tuning in, y'all. We'll get you with some more spicy content on the next episode.
Holla.